Away from your radio? Listen to 1010XL on the 1010XL app, a free download for all smartphone users, or say, Alexa, open 1010XL.
The family's waiting, two fists clinched as he walks between the ropes, a walk he's made before. And near the spot where he hugged his dad when he won in 97, he hugs his son 22 years later.
All right, there you have it. Tiger Woods, a winner. After 14 years, the drought is over. Tiger, a winner yesterday, winning his fifth green jacket. What a day. What a weekend. The 4 days. I mean, this is what it's all about. This is why we love sports. And just totally captivated America with Tiger's victory yesterday. It seems like everyone with an opinion today on what Tiger Woods did, and I certainly have one of those as well. That's where we begin. We'll do it till 9 o'clock. This is Into the Night with Rick Ballew, and you know, in my opinion, this was truly one of the great sporting events that you know, we have ever seen. And it's hard to categorize it is what I'm trying to say, because it's an individual sport. And I've seen Tiger do some unbelievable things before. I mean, I happened to be lucky enough to cover the United States Open in Pebble Beach in the year 2000 when he won by 15 strokes. It was one of the greatest individual accomplishments that I had ever seen. And to me, though, really the highlight of that particular event was on Friday afternoon when Jack Nicklaus played in his final major ever. And on a Friday afternoon, had the hole out in order to try to make the cut for the weekend, and he did not. And, you know, that was absolutely sensational stuff, what he was able to do there Thursday and Friday. At that particular age, it was the final lap ever for Jack Nicklaus. And again, he missed the cut by one stroke on a Friday. And, you know, to see a young Tiger Woods at that particular point, he had already won some majors, had the great win at Augusta in 1997. But looking at him in 2000, and that's when Tiger, you know, put together his own little grand slam, if you will, where he was able to win those four majors. And, you know, we haven't seen anything like that since. But as far as individual accomplishments, I mean, the only thing I can really compare that to would probably be when Dale Earnhardt won the Daytona 500. That was a, you know, just a phenomenal event to be at. And I know there are a lot of listeners right now who were at Daytona when Dale Earnhardt won. And I think it was his 20th try on that particular track, and he had had success before at Daytona, but never with the Daytona 500. And on that particular day, that was one of those moments where you were just standing there thinking, man, it's great to be a sports fan. And this is what it's all about. And not understanding anything about NASCAR, certainly then, I don't know a heck of a lot about it now. I do know that twice a year, though, I go to Daytona, and I just don't miss that event. It's out of this world, the 500 and then the summer race. I go every year, and I've been going for decades. And you want to be there for those big events. And watching Dale Earnhardt win was probably the greatest thing that I've ever seen individually. And I know that others will say, well, it's not an individual sport. You've got a team with you. And you understand what I'm getting at, okay? The accomplishments that we have seen in team sports are unparalleled, okay? Going to a World Series, going to a Super Bowl. Heck, I've been to 7 Florida State national champion games, national champion events, okay? They won 3 of them. They lost 4. That's pretty cool. But seeing things individually, whether it's David Duval winning here at the Players when he did, the only golfer on that particular day to be in red figures, and to see Tiger Woods win here going back a few years ago was obviously a very cool moment. But I just thought yesterday, sitting on the Lazy Boy, watching all of this from first thing in the morning until, you know, the middle of the afternoon, was about as great as anything I have ever seen. And talking with my dad right after the match, you know, my dad's going to be 82 this summer. And he told me straight up that this was one of the greatest sports stories he's ever seen in his entire life. Now, this guy lived through the impossible dream in 1967. You know, he's seen heartache of the Boston Red Sox, who invented ways to lose ball games, invented ways to blow series and blow pennant races and blow big games. You know, he's seen Wilt Chamberlain. He's seen Jim Brown. He's seen O.J. Simpson. He's seen some of the greatest players that the game has ever produced. He said that to me yesterday. You know, he watched Jack. He watched Arnold. He watched Gary Player. And he told me he had tears in his eyes yesterday watching Tiger Woods on number 18. Just think about that for a moment, how powerful sports really is and how powerful this moment really was yesterday, where it didn't matter who you were or what you were doing, you had to stop and take notice. And obviously you had an opinion. I find it kind of funny today, and Tim Brando put this out on Twitter. There's a lot of experts out there today. There really are. There's a lot of people all of a sudden, you know, woke up today and now they think they understand the game of golf. They don't. There's a lot of, well, I told you so. You know, I knew Tiger would be able to do this. Well, I think those are few and far between. Okay? The people who actually thought that Tiger Woods could win another major, you know who you are. And there's not many out there because most sailed on without Tiger Woods. And it's not a, I know more than you, because I thought Tiger would win another major. It has nothing to do with that. It just, again, is a little bit shameful that there are decorated people out there who are so, so scared to be wrong. I mean, Stephen A. Smith's getting destroyed. I am a huge Stephen A. Smith fan. But Stephen A. Smith was one of those guys who stood up and yelled into the microphone and said that the game of golf was over for Tiger Woods. Now, today, he's all right. Okay, now he's telling us that Tiger is going to go out and win more majors. And, you know, he's just one example. I think it'd be more honorable if he played the role of, I was wrong. This is a shock to me. I never thought Tiger Woods would be able to do this. I never thought he would put on that fifth green jacket. This is just out of this world. But again, I don't understand why people are so nervous and so uptight about admitting that they were wrong about something. It's okay to be wrong. We're all wrong. It's fine to admit it. I don't understand the ego involved and the why you're concerned that what people will think of you if you let it out that, hey, you didn't think this guy was going to be able to do it. I think it's more noble to actually play that role. But we see it all the time, and we do. I mean, A.J. Can, for example, okay? I don't know a person alive who thought A.J. Can would be back with his football team, yet you hear it all the time. Oh, yeah, I always thought there was a chance A.J. Can. Oh, really? You did, okay? No, you didn't. Admit you were wrong. I didn't think there was a chance that A.J. Can would be back. Admit it. No? It's just, I think the listeners and the people out there appreciate it more when you do that. So the Stephen A. Smiths of the world and, you know, these other big glory cut type of media personalities who were so wrong but now have come back and, you know, they have allowed the others to do all the chipping, to do all the cutting, you know, to knock down the tree. And then they grab that golden axe at the very end and swing it once, and the tree falls over. And, you know, that's the business that we're in, or that I'm in. And it is a shame. Others out there who have supported Tiger Woods, again, I think that this, for them, is perhaps a little bit more special. The event, obviously, captivated America. I mean, unlike anything that I can honestly think of privately in sports, or, you know, one-on-one personally in sports, as I said a moment ago, going back to when Dale Earnhardt actually did win the Daytona 500. I don't know if there's anything even close. I mean, what else would it be? Jack in 86 was pretty off the chart. But I don't think anything that Tiger's done up to this date rings the bell like what he did yesterday. I mean, ask yourself that question. I'm talking about individual now. Individual sports, whether it's tennis, whether it's boxing, I don't know, whether it's NASCAR, whether, I mean, is there anything else that you could, you put Lance Armstrong into that? Do you put, you know, back when the Olympics in, let's say, oh, how about Bruce Jenner winning the decathlon? That was pretty out of this world. What about Sugar Ray Leonard in Montreal? What he did, you know, winning the gold medal. That comes to mind. It just seems to me like the Olympics meant a little bit more back then than what the Olympics means now. Maybe that's just my personal opinion. But I'm just thinking about individual athletics. Lance Armstrong before the cheat is certainly one that would be mentioned. I don't know. But Tiger Woods, you have to put into that category after what he was able to do yesterday. All right, I'm going to talk with Gary Smith, who covered the event. And what's next now for Tiger? Again, all the experts out there all of a sudden think Tiger now has a chance to win many more majors. Coming up, Bethpage Black. Okay, he won there back in 2002. Remember, the PGA Championship is only a month away. They've changed the schedule around. Up in June, the United States Open. Talk with Gary Smith about Tiger a few months ago. Tiger elected not to play this year in Pebble, and that was obviously during the West Coast swing. I wondered why at that particular time he didn't do it, because I think it, you know, going out and playing that course and grabbing some experience and putting in four rounds, I happen to think would be something that he needed for his game. But with the way that the weather does change, you can make the case that playing there in February doesn't have much bearing compared to playing there in July. So is Tiger Woods in a situation now where all of a sudden he can win another major? Yes, I absolutely think that is the case. We'll talk to Gary Smits about that. He's going to join us coming up in a little bit. Then we'll talk about OTAs. The Jaguars reported today. Jalen Ramsey not there. I have an opinion on that. I'll discuss that with you in a little bit. We'll talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning down 0-3. What? I mean, are you kidding? Who would have believed that? Okay? I mean, Tiger Woods winning a Masters, is that more surprising than Tampa Bay being down 3-0 to the Columbus Blue Jackets? And what a game last night. Thoroughly enjoyed that. It's also Jackie Robinson's day in the great day of Major League Baseball. Look back on his career and how it changed the great game. Really, for everyone, Branch Rickey took that chance. And Jackie Robinson today being celebrated by everyone who is playing in the big. So we'll certainly talk about that coming up as well. A look back at the Gators, their spring game on Saturday. We have that coming up in our second hour as well. So we're going to be absolutely jam-packed. Glad you're with us. We're just barely underway. It's Into the Night with Rick Ballew. Let's get to Gary Smits. He covered the Masters for the Florida Times-Union. He is their golf writer. And he joins us next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Monday Night Show brought to you by Key Buick GMC. Unbelievable deals right now on Buicks and GMCs, including a lifetime warranty. You buy a brand new vehicle over at Key, lifetime warranty on GMCs and Buicks. Visit them across from Tinseltown on the corner of Southside and Gate. Again, some phenomenal deals on trucks and cars. That's Key Buick GMC. Let's bring in Gary Smits, golf writer for the Florida Times Union. He has been in Augusta covering the Masters, and he joins Rick Ballew into the night. Gary, thanks for a couple of moments. Just an unbelievable tournament, and you know, so many naysayers over the last decade and a half never thought that this moment would happen. It did, and I thought it made for one of the greatest sporting events that I've ever seen.
Well, Tiger didn't give us any reason to believe that it might happen. You know, he's had so many issues, more than the average athlete. And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. the sports editor of the Augusta Chronicle, John Boyette, and I were talking to Gary Player on Saturday under the big oak trees behind the clubhouse where everybody chit-chats. And we were talking about if Tiger could pull this off, where it would rate in golf comebacks. And the two examples were Jack Nicklaus winning the 86 Masters at 46, Ben Hogan winning the 1950 U.S. Open after an absolutely horrific car accident where he really, probably shouldn't have been alive. Or even walked again. And Gary Player pointed out that Jack Nicklaus was battling age.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Hogan was battling injury, albeit a very, very serious injury. But Tiger was battling age, injury, and baggage.
Yeah.
That started in 2009. Became a tabloid punchline. The $75 million divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And, and then issues that even extended it two summers ago where he got picked up for the DUI in West Palm Beach.
Right.
On painkillers.
Yeah.
So there was a perfect storm of three factors: injury, age, and personal issues that were combating Tiger. And Gary Player said that if Tiger goes on and wins this, it will be the greatest comeback in golf history. And I guess what? I'm not going to argue with that guy right now.
Yeah, it's Gary Smith's our guest. It's a good point, and I remember the John Daly incident that happened here down at the beach where he let himself go that night and withdrew from the tournament. And I look at John Daly as a guy that has been through so many issues, but he is so forgiven. That's kind of the way it's gone for Tiger Woods. I mean, I think he showed that he is human. When he was so good and he was winning all these events, he was curt to the media. He was at times disrespectful to the golf fans. But I think when he went through these personal issues, it brought so many more people over to his side because they realized that this guy is real just like you and I.
Yeah. John was never distant from the fans the way Tiger had been. The one thing about this is that everybody talks about that it's a kinder, gentler Tiger Woods now, and he jokes with the media. I mean, that of the five Masters that he's won, I guarantee you that was the longest post-game press conference that he had. And he almost wanted to stay there and keep talking about it, keep rehashing it, and talk about where he's been and what he's come from. And, he's humbled. He really is humbled a little bit. And John never had the injury factor. John just had the self-inflicted stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, and John's had issues with people in the media. He's had issues with me. I mean, John still won't talk to me because of, some of the things that we wrote, some of the things that we certainly had, we had license to write.
Yeah.
Because John sued us, and when we won the lawsuit, his PGA Tour personnel file was part of public record, so it was fair game. John never saw it that way, and I'm disappointed by that because I always liked John, and I felt John liked me. But be that as it may, I think that John and Tiger both have a parallel here, and I think it's sports fans, American sports fans, and I think Americans in general are very forgiving people. People love redemption stories. People love it when, they may not like you when you stray. They may not like you when you have affairs and you have gambling losses and this kind of stuff. But Americans are suckers for good redemption stories, and I think it's because we are a very forgiving people.
Yeah.
And I think it's ingrained in us like that, and I think that's why there's so much rejoicing right now about what Tiger did.
Yeah, it was just amazing. There's no question about it. To be able to witness this yesterday, I really can't compare it to anything else. I mean, I know you were there as well in 2000, the United States Open at Pebble Beach. I happened to be covering that event as well, and he won that by 15 strokes, and he just dominated the field, and I thought that was a special event. But really, the only personal individual sport that I can think of that comes close to what I saw yesterday with Tiger Woods would have been when I was at the Daytona 500 when Dale Earnhardt won.
Yeah. And you know what? That was Dale didn't necessarily have injury or personal issues and everything. He just couldn't close that one out.
Yes. Yeah.
That one race, that one event. But you remember when Dale won that, and everybody's crews stood there,
right,
and high-fived him through the car. And then yesterday, and Mark, I talked to Mark McCumber today for a story we're writing tomorrow about, you know, Gene Frenette's going to have a very good column about what this means for Tiger's chances to break Jack's record of 18 majors. And I wrote a story about, does this accomplishment eclipse Jack's 86 Masters victory?
Mm-hmm.
Mark McCumber was playing in the twosome ahead of Jack Nicklaus in that 86 Masters, and he had everything. He was right in the middle of that cauldron,
right,
of everything going on. And Mark's contention was that, you know, that Jack had the age issue and Tiger had the age issue, but that was pretty much it. And he said that this may be a little bit different of a situation because Jack didn't expect to win this Masters. Everybody thought that Jack was kind of going into retirement and that he was kind of fading away. And even when Jack won this, he would say, you know, this is it for me. I've got no interest in playing much more. I think this is going to be it for me. But we see, Mark said, this is different. We see this as maybe Tiger 3.0. If you remember, Tiger came back after the 2009 personal issues, and within a couple of years, in 2013, he won five times. He was the PGA Tour Player of the Year. He won the Players' Championship.
Sure did.
And so then the injuries happened.
Mm-hmm.
So now this is Tiger 3.0. And Mark said this is not the crowning achievement to a great career. This is the beginning of another phase of his career. And Mark says that he believes that Tiger has three to five more good years. Jack Nicklaus said this on a Golf Channel the other night. He thinks Tiger's got 40 majors left in him, another 10 years,
wow,
where he can be competitive.
Yeah, it's tough to argue with that. I mean, he's in great physical shape. The issue will obviously be the back, and let's discuss that. Tiger Woods, obviously your Masters champion. We're talking about it with Gary Smits, who covered the Masters for the Florida Times Union, joining Rick Ballew here on 1010XL at 92.5 FM. All right, let's talk about the back now. All right, that's the issue, you know, because practice, Gary, I mean, it's not too often that you say, all right, this guy just won a major, but his game isn't perfect. I mean, he struggled with short putts. He missed fairways over the weekend. He had great recovery shots, but he missed a lot of fairway. He didn't miss a lot, but he missed some. So the point I'm trying to get at here is that there's still room for improvement, and he said that himself, particularly with his putting.
Well, if he really had the bad putting day on Friday, and if he'd have made as many putts on Friday as he made on the weekend, he would have won this thing going away. Most players, most of the great players, develop putting issues late in life, into their 40s. It's not necessarily injury-related, but it's kind of nerve-related.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just don't believe you can make those. However, Tiger said that he doesn't practice his putting as much because of bending over, picking the ball out of the cup. I guess that's an issue. And the thing is, you get a course like Augusta. I think what you have to watch out for with Tiger is the courses he's had a lot of success at. Augusta National, Bay Hill, Firestone. Of course, they're not at Firestone anymore. The Torrey Pines.
Mm-hmm.
Pebble Beach coming up. And by the way, he's got a couple of majors coming up. He's at Bethpage in May for the PGA. He's won that and tied for sixth.
Right.
In majors at Bethpage.
Mm-hmm.
And then at Pebble, obviously, he won a Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and then he won, you just said it, he won the U.S. Open by a million.
Yep.
I think what Tiger's going to do is he's going to cherry-pick even more He said yesterday he's not going to play the schedule he played last year because he was trying to get eligible for things. He had to come back up through the World Golf Ranking. So you're going to see Tiger at the Memorial. You're going to see him at Torrey Pines. You're going to see him at Bay Hill. I think he's obviously going to play the Players because you don't have to hit it a long way.
Right.
And, you know, so he is going to cherry pick a lot more than he always did. And he's going to pick the courses that suit him, where he can kind of steer the ball around, where he can, as he said yesterday, where he can plod. And so you're not going to see Tiger play 20 times a year. We're going to see 16 or 17. And, you know, you've got the four majors, you got the Players, there's five. You've got the playoff events. Let's just say he skips the first one. That's two more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's seven. Then you throw in Bay Hill, La Jolla, the Memorial. There's 10. And it doesn't leave room for a lot of other events.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying, if you're Hilton Head or Quad Cities, don't hold your breath.
Yeah, yeah. He's not going to play, you know, as many events. And, you know, with his back condition, I understand. Yeah, he's got to hire someone to pick the ball out of the cup. I mean, he's got to work on his putting. It almost cost him this tournament.
Yeah. Well, and according to the rules of golf, your caddy can go pick the ball up out of the cup for you. You know, there's nothing, you know, you can ask your playing partner to do that. It doesn't matter. So I think it'll be okay. But I think Tiger's going to pick the golf courses where experience matters the most. His experience matters the most. And now the kind of the odd tournament out this year is going to be Royal Portrush, where the British Open is going to be played, but yep. They haven't played a British Open there since the 1950s.
Yeah, he's never
so
played there.
It's going to be new for everybody. Oh. It's a hilly course. It's exposed to the weather.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have a lot of ups and downs. I don't think Tiger's going to play well at Portrush, but Bethpage and Pebble, I think he's going to be a threat.
Yeah, we talked about it a few months ago. I was actually surprised that he did not play Pebble Beach earlier this year because of the fact that the major is back in Pebble Beach in the month of June. But, I mean, obviously the weather there it changes dramatically, and I guess you can make the case that playing there in February wouldn't have a huge bearing on him being there and performing in June.
Yeah, the USGA is going to change the course. The fairways are going to be narrow. The rough is going to be up. The greens are going to be faster. The wind's going to be different. The weather is going to be actually pretty good. The only thing they have sometimes in June is they have fog problems. But they don't have wind or storm problems like they can have in February. so that won't be the issue, but it's going to be a little bit different golf course.
Yep. All right, Gary, appreciate it as always. Great stuff in the Florida Times Union. And, boy, you were lucky to cover that event. That was certainly a huge one.
Rick, that was something. Thank God for the weather, because it gave a lot more of guys a chance to get out there and actually watch Tiger play some holes. You know, usually the Masters, there's so much stuff that happens on so many different holes, and the final group doesn't usually tee off until right before 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So you kind of watch what you can, and you got to get back to the media center and monitor things on the computers and on the TV. But we got a chance to get out there in the middle of and hear. There's nothing like hearing an Augusta roar.
You know,
you got the valleys, you got the low spots, the high spots. Everything kind of echoes out there, and you know, it really was a treat to see that and hear it.
No doubt. Hey, Gary, appreciate it as always.
Okay, thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
There he goes, Gary Smits from the Florida Times Union, covering the Masters. Tiger Woods, your champion. And, you know, I'm sure the weather yesterday screwed up a lot of folks across the country, their schedule. I think a lot of people, you know, played golf early on Sunday or planned on playing golf early on Sunday. I played golf early on Saturday and, you know, was done in plenty of time to watch the Masters. CBS was streaming it all weekend long on the computer. So you could watch it early in the morning on Thursday and Friday, and I think it went on TV at, what, 2 or 3 on Saturday. So I was able to get all that in before going to the Kenny Chesney concert on Saturday night. And I was happy that Kenny had a couple of opening bands, so he didn't actually go on stage until like 9 or maybe 10 past 9, I didn't get there until like 8:30 or something like that. So I didn't see the opening bands because I wanted to watch the conclusion of Saturday's round. And I was able to do that. But I'm sure on Sunday that did screw up a lot. I mean, people go to church on Sunday. People have family obligations on Sunday and things on those lines. And you probably had to change some things up because Tiger in that last group teed off at 9:20 yesterday morning. But boy, what a day. Really just out of this world. What is it about Tiger that is really separate from anything else right now in sports? I can't even think of anyone that is remotely close to him. Michael Jordan certainly was as a, you know, a sports figure in a team-related sport. But individually, there's been nothing even close to this with Tiger Woods. And everyone has an opinion. There's no casual observers of Tiger Woods. You're either all in, or for another reason, you're all out. There's really not any in between. And, you know, I became a fan of this guy so young in his career. I've never been, you know, a front runner, things along those lines when it comes to sports. I'm from the city of Boston, and I grew up loving those sports teams. I went to school at Florida State. I'm an FSU graduate, and I take fondly to my alma mater, although some think I'm too hard on them when things don't go right. If that's the case, too bad. Tough. I'm not going to change my ways now. That's never going to happen. But I did front run with Tiger Woods. I jumped on that bandwagon in the late 90s, and I don't know why. It just happened. And it's such a better sport, in my opinion, when he's in it and he's winning. I want to come back and talk about that and give you an opportunity to voice your two cents as well. Let's do a caller segment at 641-1010. What is it that stands out about Tiger Woods? What is it that you either love this guy for, or I don't like using the word hate or despise, but there are many out there who feel that way about Tiger as well. And I'd like to separate that and figure out why it is that you either love them or that you don't. Because, again, there's very few out there that just kind of roll with the punches with Tiger or take him from a casual point of view. It's one or the other. So let's come back. Let's do that. I got wide open phone lines if you'd like to join us. 641-1010. You can hit me on Twitter as well. That's Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, at 1010XL. Glad you're with us. Into the Night with Rick Ballou.
Into the Night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, good to have you with us. A lot on the Jags coming up in hour number two. OTAs began today. An opportunity tomorrow to meet with members of the Jaguars. Nick Foles, Calais Campbell. Looking forward to getting that opportunity. Coach Marone will speak as well at 11:45 tomorrow. So I'm going to head over there and get the very latest. Saw Doug Marone at the Kenny Chesney concert on Saturday night. A lot of good people out there. I didn't know one song from Kenny Chesney, but it was a fun show. And my goodness, Jacksonville. The ladies were out on Saturday night. Wow. Dressed to the nines and getting after it, partying in downtown Jacksonville. Good event. And I came away a little surprised. I was Kenny Chesney. I thought he was going to sing about a three-legged dog and about his pickup that won't start and mama getting run over by a train and, you know, the girl that got away. But no. It had like a Buffett feel to it where, you know, his theme of his tour is, you know, shoes off and great video and showing some pretty cool situations and tropical. Love the water. And it was a good show. You know, listen, everyone there was having fun. who am I to put a stinker on things if people are out with smiles on their face having a good time? I enjoyed the concert. It was okay. I've never really done country. I've done Garth Brooks once, and now I've done Kenny Chesney. And both times, I didn't want to go. I did go, and I end up enjoying it. So there you go. Good to see a lot of folks out, too, this past Saturday night at the Daly's Place. Gets good shows coming up over there, too. Bob Seger next. Looking forward to that. And Derek Trucks, who I've been texting with, the Desky Trucks Band, are coming up as well this summer. All right, let's grab a few of these calls. I want to talk about Tiger and what is it about this guy that is just so special that, you know, it's clearly one or the other. You either love this guy and you were rooting and yelling at the TV yesterday. I mean, on 16 when that ball almost went in. I mean, I almost fell out of the chair. I thought that was going to be an ace. But you either love it or you hate it. So let's discuss that. 641-1010. Let's kick it off with John. John, into the night with Rick Ballew. Welcome.
Hey, Rick. Hi. How's it going? The reason why it is what it is that Tiger moves the needle, and we all know about the ratings game when he's in contention for any type of tournament. He's moving the needle. But my problem with golf is this here. He has no challengers in terms of he stared down the field yesterday. He didn't go out and shoot a 66 to win the Masters yesterday. He shot a moderate round of 70. But all the guys in the weight, and I'm talking about supposed to be the best players in the world, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, yep. Molinari, who just came off of the Open. I mean, he stared them down. He didn't do anything spectacular. These guys are, when they're in his presence, it seems like they fall and crumble beneath him in regards to that matter there. Because, like I said, I mean, two shots behind with seven holes left to play, and you still can't get it done against him? I'm talking about Francisco at this particular time here. It, right now in golf, what golf needs is this here. A player in Brooks Koepka is the only one that I see out of this group of these 20-some and 30-some that may have a shot of staring down Tiger and say, let's go toe-to-toe and let's fight with one another here. And then make it out a new person that say, I want to duel with you. But yesterday was like this up.
You know, John, you bring up an interesting point because what has been said now for years is that these members on the PGA Tour no longer fear Tiger Woods. Now, how many times have you heard that? It's been said by a lot of people. They don't fear Tiger Woods anymore. You can make that claim that they crumbled yesterday. Schauffele missed some big shots coming in. Brooks Koepka missed that putt on 18. And he makes that putt, and after Tiger posted a bogey, you have extra holes. I mean, Francesco Molinari began with a two-stroke lead. And I honestly thought, after what I saw him do on Saturday, he was going to win the Masters. And when Tiger had back-to-back bogeys on 4 and 5, okay, it was about, 11 o'clock in the morning when that happened. Yeah, I remember after the bogey on 5 saying, there's no way he's going to win today. It's just not going to happen. But they miss putts going in. Webb Simpson did. Tony Finau did. Jason Day did. John Rahm did. Patrick Cantlay had the eagle and had a one-stroke lead and then immediately gave it up with bogey. So I don't know if it's the pressure of Tiger Woods. I don't know if it was the pressure of the Masters. And it is unlike any other event. It's not like here. It's not like anything else. Even the United States Open. It's not. I think the pressure is that thick, especially on the back nine. Let's go to Dylan next up. Into the Night with Rick Ballew. Welcome.
Hey, what's going on, Rick?
Hey, how are you?
Not bad. I wanted to add to what you just said. I don't think the younger guys like Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson, have really had the chance to experience, except for last year at the PGA, the Tiger factor. Those guys are too young to really experience what kind of edge he brings to the field. And another thing is you were talking about the guys who love or hate Tiger. I saw yesterday strangers high-fiving, cheering, Mm-hmm. And it was just an absolutely incredible scene to see him walk off 18 hugging his son like he hugged his dad in 97. And it was just an incredible scene. And I hope he continues to play well and win more majors, because I think it's nothing but great for the game.
Yeah, Dylan, thanks for getting in. It was. It was truly a special moment. And I know that that bothers some people. Now, I don't care. I don't care if it bothers you. It's like there is a mixture of folks out there that really have a problem with Tiger Woods' success. And, you know, I, as a guy right here who has made so many mistakes in my life, okay, and been given other opportunities, and I don't blame anyone but myself. How can you not root for someone like this? All the problems that he's been through, he's a real human being. He's not a god. And the only issue that I've ever had with Tiger Woods is that I don't necessarily feel that he's always treated people the right way. The media, the fans. I think he's learned from it. I think he's matured. I think he's grown up, which is really the same thing. And he probably looks back on that point of his life and wishes that he probably handled things a little bit differently. Now, I also wonder what it must be like to be Tiger Woods and to have that amount of pressure on you where everywhere you go, people want your time, they want your attention. That's got to be aggravating. But he is so different now, the way that he treats the general public. I mean, I've seen him, I go every year when he speaks here at the Players. And he seems different now than he did. I remember covering him, you know, my first tournament was 1997 here at the Players. He's a totally different guy. But he created so much joy yesterday for millions and millions and millions of people who wanted to see this so much. And just think about how cool it was last year when he finally won a PGA Tour event. To think that he won the Masters. I'm glad that people were alive to see this. This was a history-setting day for Tiger Woods and for golf. And it's great for everyone involved. I mean, what a special moment that was. And I bet you there were a ton of people yesterday who had lumps in their throat, tears in their eyes. And that's what's so great about sports. Now, I'm trying to think of events like that where I've actually really witnessed something. You know, watching Carl Yastrzemski run around Fenway Park for his last game ever was pretty cool. Larry Bird's last game for me was pretty cool. You know, Bobby Orr didn't go out the way I wanted him to. He was my hero. But when they raised his number four to the rafters, those were, you know, those are kind of moments where you had that lump in your throat. You know, the first time the Red Sox finally snapped that, that was pretty cool. You know, Bowden finally winning a national title, that was pretty cool. Coming back here a couple of years ago, flying in with the Jaguars when they knocked off Pittsburgh. To get ready to go to the SC Championship game and having thousands and thousands of fans at the stadium waiting. It wasn't like 96. That was pretty remarkable, too, when they knocked off Denver. All right? There's a large contingency of listeners right now that probably remember that day in 96, how cool that was. And then again last year or 2 years ago now when that happened. I mean, there are certain events that stick out. All of those I happen to be at, you know, or see. But this one, you know, I was just leaning on my Lazy Boy yesterday, just completely blown away. Didn't even know what to say. Just stood there and listened and watched it. It was just phenomenal. And hopefully you enjoyed it as well. All right, more on this coming up in the second hour. I do want to get to the OTAs as well. Jalen Ramsey's not here. Let's discuss that and what to look for tomorrow as the Jaguars begin their OTAs. They actually did today. Media availability tomorrow. Come back, do some Jags in hour number two as we go into the night with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, OTAs begin today for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Media availability coming up tomorrow morning. Looking forward to heading out there. I will hear from Coach Doug Marrone tomorrow, also Calais Campbell. I guess Nick Foles is going to be pushed back until around 2 o'clock or so. But nonetheless, get an opportunity to get in there and just, you know, get a little bit of a feel as to what is going on now with this football team. It's amazing how the time continues to fly. Here it is, what, April 15th, tax day. Damn, did I write a huge check today. I don't know. I've had a great year, so I got nothing to complain about. But I hate writing that large check. That just really stinks. I don't know. Every year I think that I'm going to do a better job and get, you know, tax myself quarterly and do things like that. Then every year I just end up not doing it, and then you stroke that huge one today. But yeah, it is what it is. You know, you got to pay your tax. But damn it, that was a large check. I mean, there's certain checks I hate writing. You know what I mean? And I don't write many checks anymore. Everything is just kind of taken out of my account. I'm sure that's the way you roll as well. But here it is with the IRS, man. You got to write the damn check. And that's just a hassle. But I'm sure a lot of people probably pretty pissed by that, waiting to the last moment, struggling to get to the post office today. I didn't. The GF did. But I wrote the check. All right. Anyway. How about you, Uwe? You get your taxes done?
Yeah, I got them done about a month ago.
Okay.
I had to wait a little bit, though. I had, just because of the certain 401k plan I had, they sent me the wrong W-2, so it was without some important information, so they had to resend that. So it took a little bit longer than I would have liked, but I got her done.
Yeah, it's, I create my own little business. It's called Blue Radio, and I run everything through that. For different reasons, and you know, it allows me to use expenses, and no matter what it is that I'm doing, and it becomes a little bit of a grind, you know, to piece everything together, to send it over to my tax people. So it is a long process, but it I know this day for some is a great day if you're getting back money. For others, especially if you are involved in a small business like I am. Yeah, I mean, you end up writing a big check, and that really sucks. But anyway, you knew it was coming, and it's here. So it's the 15th of April. But my point being is it's the 15th of April. It feels to me like this season just ended. Like 2 weeks ago, I swear I was standing on the sideline in Houston staring at Leonard Fournette and T.J. Yeldon sulking on the bench. That seems like it was 14 days ago to me. It wasn't. It was more than 4 months ago. That's the point I'm trying to make. Don't blink twice, because before you know it, the season is going to be here. I mean, we're a week and 3 days away from the NFL draft. Then they're going to drop a rookie minicamp on you. Right after that, in early May. Heck, we're 5 weeks away from OTAs when they kick off there on May 21st. I believe the schedule gets officially announced this week. I spoke with some people just the other day. Expect that this week for the NFL schedule to be revealed. Now, the preseason games were announced about a week ago. The Jaguars certainly do know who their opponents are. They know where they're going on the road, and they know who they're playing here at home. The only thing that has not been revealed are the dates of those particular games. And I think it's a great time just to get the schedule, because it affords you the opportunity to do quite a few things. I know as soon as I get it, every year I automatically put a W or an L next to the schedule, and certainly every host in America has that show. And I think it's irresponsible not to have that show. So we'll do it as well. Hopefully it comes out in a day or two. I'm not sure the exact timing, but again, I do believe it's going to be this week. But it's also pretty cool to be able to put together your fall schedule. I think a lot of you go to Tallahassee, Gainesville, Athens. Maybe a couple of you may go to Miami for the weekend. You know, I almost made a mistake there and said Orlando. You know, for you Central Florida people. And then I said, but if I mention Orlando, then I'm going to have to say Tampa for you South Florida people. Then I'm going to have to, I mean, I'm just, you know, on a day that I write a big check, I'm about big football factories. And you're still not there, Central Florida. You can do what you want. You can jump on my back. You could send me hate mail. But when I'm talking about putting together weekends with the Jaguars, I'm still going to refer to Tallahassee, Gainesville, and Athens. I'm just not going to refer to you in Orlando. I just don't think of you that way in the world of college football. That's just me. Maybe others will do it a little bit differently. But it is kind of cool to do that with the schedule. You know, when is Florida State at home? Are the Jags home? Can you do a 2-for-1? Obviously, I can't go to Florida State games if the Jaguars are on the road as a sideline reporter. But I do it every year where, you know, my dad will fly in from Boston, whatever. We'll do a big weekend in Tally. I'll be the designated driver because I'm up early the next day with my Jaguar responsibilities. And that's always kind of cool to be able to put that out there. And I know that a lot of you do that as well. Plus, a lot of you will travel to one Jaguar game a year, maybe two. I know that I am friends with a lot of Jaguar fans who at least once a year take one road trip with the Jaguars, whether it's London or whether it's the 8 on the road. That's just something that you do. And again, when these dates come out, it'll give you an opportunity to begin to put that particular schedule there for you. You know, as far as the Jaguars, what happens for them during this OTA period is it's basically team meetings. It's a coaching type of situation. You're not allowed to do anything practice-wise, coaches with players. You're allowed 4 hours. That is the maximum a day that the coaches can spend with the players. Now, during that four-hour time period, you are obviously allowed to lift, work on your strength, work on your conditioning, work on your rehabilitation if you've been injured and you know you're fighting an off-season injury. And you know the Jaguars have plenty of those to deal with right now, including Marquise Lee, including three offensive linemen, right, including a couple of DBs who went down very late in the year, including Ronnie Harrison. So a lot of that is happening. You are allowed to teach, and, you know, a new offensive coordinator is in. There are some new position coaches that are in, a new offensive line coach, a new defensive line coach, a new secondary coach. So there's going to be new philosophies involved. There's going to be some changes you want to believe offensively as far as the offensive scheme now with John DeFilippo in and Nick Foles now learning this offense and these new offensive players. So this is really an important time as far as the teaching process of installing your offense, installing your defense, and getting to know what this team is going to do as far as changes that way. It's also important to develop some, you know, camaraderie, some team chemistry, things along those lines. And I personally hope it's pretty uncomfortable down there. You're coming off a 5-win season. I don't want it all being happy, you know, go lucky. That's the one thing that really bothered me about what I saw in Tallahassee during the spring. Too many freaking smiles. Okay? You shouldn't be smiling. Not when you won 5 games at Florida State. You should be pissed off. Okay? And you should be working hard. It looked to me like there was way, 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 way too many laughs. And a lot of us, oh, settle down, Blue. It doesn't matter. I mean, they should, you know, they're working hard. You know, they should be having a good time. It's only the spring. Screw that. I want it to be the closest thing to a boot camp. You just won 5 football games. I want the same feeling here for the Jaguars. I want it to be an uncomfortable type of feeling when they just won five games. I want people looking over their shoulders. I want people believing that their jobs are on the line, that there's a draft coming up in 10 days, and that guys are going to lose jobs. I don't want any comfortable sort of feeling. Not when they win five football games. So hopefully that's the tone that's being sent. And I want the coaches. Coaches lost their job. New coaches are in. We just talked about that. I want it to be uneasy. And I hope Tom Coughlin's presence creates that. I hope Doug Marrone's presence creates that. It was a year with Doug Marrone, who we will meet tomorrow at 11:45. I thought Doug took too much on last year. Everything was his fault. And he needs to be careful in that situation, because regardless of what happened, Doug Marrone took the punch. Now, I think that that's the way that I want my coach to be, but you also have to give out the responsibility to your other coaches and to your players to perform. And if they're not doing it, they need to be blamed for the mishap. Doug Marrone played the player's coach role a year ago, and I thought he took too many of those punches. I mean, everything from Blake Bortles not getting it done to the miscommunication with Leonard Fournette. Just go back and listen to what Doug said. It's on him. That was on me. No. It's not on you, Doug. It's not all on you. Some of it is. At times it is. But it's, you know, six games for Leonard Fournette not playing because of injury concerns. And, you know, was he really hurt? Was it a pain threshold situation? Or was it the ability not to have any burst type of situation? That's never going to be revealed. People have opinions on what it was. That's not Doug Marrone's fault. Not Doug Marrone's fault that Blake Bortles wasn't completing passes. So I think the coach needs to take some responsibility. It's not Doug Marrone's fault that three offensive linemen got hurt, that Marquise Lee got hurt. Is it Doug Marrone's fault that maybe the team didn't blitz enough? Is it Doug Marrone's fault that maybe the team didn't take enough shots downfield? Okay, yeah. There are things that he can be blamed for. But it seemed like, you know, guys out in London that night, that mishap at a nightclub on Doug Marrone, that's my fault. That's not your fault, man. Those are pros who went out. They made the mistake. You don't have to sit them down every day and point your finger at them and say, now, don't get in trouble. These are pros. They know right from wrong. Doug Marrone took the punch there, too. I want a little less of that him this year. I want a little bit more of that pressure on the players. And don't you as well? Don't you want to have a player? Credit Bortles for one thing. He put it on himself. He didn't cast off on others and point fingers at the guys around him. I think Jacksonville needs more of that in this locker room. A little bit less of Coach Marrone saying it's my fault, and a little bit more on the players taking responsibility for not getting it done. So hopefully that's a change that this football team makes for the positive. Again, tomorrow they will meet. You'll hear from Coach Marrone. Also tomorrow, Calais Campbell expected to speak. Nick Foles expected to speak. So I'll be down there tomorrow to get that. And certainly we'll discuss that coming up tomorrow night right here on 1010XL. In 92.5 FM. All right, when we do return, let's get to some news and notes. Great day in the world of sports. Really some very interesting things have developed in the last couple of hours. So we'll hit all of that. We call it Truth Teller and News and Notes. It's brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com, and it's coming up next.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we've got a 9 o'clock tonight. Denny and James will get things rolling at 9. That's the way things are here nights. We'll push it back 1 hour tomorrow night for the ladies. Helmets and heels. And then get back into our regular rotation. Wednesday through the remainder of the week, 7 to 9, each and every night on 1010XL in 92.5 FM. All right, let's do something right now we like to call Truth Teller News and Notes. Brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com, only law firm in the state of Florida where if someone has been injured directly out on the road by a truck, a tractor trailer, a bus, an RV, anything on those lines, and a death occurred or a serious injury occurred, and it's just a horrific situation for you or someone that you're aware of, make sure you know about TruckCrashLaw.com. It's the only law firm in this state where this is what they deal with only. This is their expertise, and they're very good at what they do. So go to TruckCrashLaw.com. They're actually based right here in Jacksonville, but they're the only ones statewide. All right, let's get to some football news for you. How about Bruce Arians hiring 28 coaches? How much is too much? Talk about Nick Saban, all those unpaid interns and all those people he's got that have different responsibilities for Alabama, and they're all in the press box, but he's actually got 28 coaches. I was trying to look at the Jaguars. I believe the Jaguars have 10 offensive coaches. They have 7 defensive coaches. So that's 17. 2 special team coaches, that's 19. And then they got, like, you know, Tyler Wolf, who's the director of team administration. They basically have 19 coaches. Bruce Arians has got 28. I mean, you get 90 players in camp, but once you make cuts, you're down to 53, and you'll add another 10 to the practice squad. But think about that. I mean, you're basically 2-1 players to coaches. That is just insane, in my opinion. How much is too much? I mean, good for them. They have a job, but that's a lot of voices. It's a lot of different opinion. Can you get that much more work done with that many people? I don't know the answer to that question. I sometimes wonder, could there be too many guys? Each has their own responsibility. I mean, it's tough putting in the work, and I see it. And I see it on the road, too, what these guys are able to do, these assistant coaches, what they're able to do. But boy, that just sounds like a lot. 28. Other NFL news, we know that Jameis Winston talked about putting a ton of weight on, not a ton of weight on, but adding more weight to his frame during the offseason. Well, now Marcus Mariota's doing the same thing. This is kind of rare, hearing about NFL quarterbacks putting on weight. Always been talk about quarterbacks losing weight. That conversation came up quite a bit with Blake Bortles about his body, but we always hear about, you know, it's one thing for college kids trying to put on weight, like James Blackman or Nikosi Perry or something along those lines. But once you get to this level, you don't typically hear about NFL coaches putting weight on. But that is the case right now. And again, here's two quarterbacks where that is going to happen. The deadline is tonight for Russell Wilson. Self-imposed deadline. If Seattle does not give him a contract extension, he says he will not sign with the team after the fact. He begins his final year, 4 years, $87.6 million. Seattle needs to face the facts right now. Russell Wilson is going to be the highest paid player in the National Football League. He's next up. He's going to get more money than Aaron Rodgers. He's going to get more money than Kirk Cousins. He is going to be the top overall player signed. And he's only 30. He's coming off arguably one of his best years. Just pay the man. I don't know what the holdup is. Tiger Woods, we've talked a lot about him tonight. How about the situation in Nevada where a man placed $85,000 on Tiger Woods to win the Masters, 14-1 odds. The payout, $1,190,000. How does that sound? That is a lot of money to risk. 85 large. Wow. Unbelievable. I don't care how much money I had. I can't see a situation where I would ever make a wager for $85,000. And this guy played a 14-1 odd, choosing Tiger Woods. The folks in Vegas took an absolute bath. For those of you who follow the world of gambling, you understand that the public loves a favorite. The public is always going to look at the team they like the best and play the favorite. It happens in every sport. The general public, that's how they bet. The general public loves Tiger Woods. The general public bet on Tiger Woods. So they paid out millions and millions. They took a huge loss, did the folks in Las Vegas. But this one individual bet at the, I guess it was the SLS Casino in Las Vegas, paid out $1.19 million. Pretty incredible. Speaking of incredible, 72 years ago today, Jackie Robinson made his debut with the Brooklyn Dodgers. Can't imagine what that must have been like. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to see Jackie Robinson. I thought the movie on him was pretty good. I've done a lot of research, a lot of reading over the years on Jackie Robinson. And baseball does this the right way. Jackie, 42, you know, being celebrated today in every Major League Baseball park. I can't imagine how hard this must have been on him. But it was so great for the game. And what he brought to the game was pretty phenomenal as well. When we saw him, he had a little bit of Ty Cobb in him, the way he came in with his cleats up, stole home often, never used any batting gloves. You know, he changed the game forever. And so many people who have followed him respect him for what he meant to Major League Baseball, obviously breaking the color barrier back in 1947. 72 years ago today, this happened for Jackie Robinson with the Dodgers. Dodgers in action tonight. Clayton Kershaw actually will take the bump tonight for the first time this year. So that is good news there for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Been playing some great baseball until they actually were swept late last week. All right, I'll give you some hockey scores because I know you folks are just hanging on a thread right now. You want the very latest as to what's going on in the National Hockey League. Damn it, Toronto! Toronto up 2-1 over Boston. Ah, my goodness. 2-1 right now. The Maple Leafs, two of the original six, having at it. This one north of the border. Again, midway through period number two. The Maple Leafs, two. The Bruins, one. The defending Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals are down in Carolina right now. That is 1-0. Carolina is up in that game. Washington up 2-0 in the series. Tonight, late night, Nashville with Dallas all tied at one apiece, and Calgary and Colorado tied at one as well. What has happened to the Tampa Bay Lightning? I mean, outside of Tiger Woods, is there a bigger story in sports right now than Tampa Bay? I mean, to do what they did during the regular season, to be as dominant as they were, 128 points, 62-16-4 was their regular season record. And now all of a sudden they're down 3-0, beaten again last night, this time in Columbus by the Blue Jackets. Game four coming up tomorrow night. Could be a clinching game here for CBJ. You know, the one thing about hockey, though, this series isn't over. You know, if we were talking the NBA here, or we were talking the World Series here, obviously everything in football is just one game. But when you get in these long series, whether it's a 5-game set or a 7-game set, and every round in the National Hockey League playoffs is a 7-game series. But if this was basketball or baseball, for the most part, you would say that this series is over. I know there have been examples of teams who have come down 3-0 before. Obviously, the Red Sox did it in 2004 against the New York Yankees. But in hockey, I would not discount Tampa Bay. They could very easily win 4 straight hockey games. Could. They could also be bounced out tomorrow night. 4-0. Can you imagine the odds that you could have got on that? We just talked about a $1.19 million odd that was won on Tiger Woods. Imagine if you took Columbus to win four straight against Tampa Bay. The odds that you could have got on that. The odds to win the series, I'll have to look back on. But I mean, Tampa Bay was an enormous favorite as a number one seed against the number eight seed. But again, that'll be going on again tomorrow night. They'll have an opportunity to sweep, as will the New York Islanders. I mean, what has happened to the Pittsburgh Penguins again? Pittsburgh is normally known as a team that turns up their game once you get to the playoffs. The Islanders hosting a playoff series for the first time since 1988, where they actually have the home ice in the playoffs. 1988, kids. It's a long, long time ago. Up 3-0 in that series. You had a series 2-1 favoring St. Louis over Winnipeg and San Jose now trailing to Las Vegas 2-1 in that best of seven. There you go. Truth Teller News and Notes each and every night brought to you by truckcrashlaw.com. Again, their law firm based right here in Florida. If you're aware of someone who has been injured, or even if it was fatal and happened out on the road, an accident that was created by a tractor trailer, a truck, an RV, a bus, anything like that, make sure you know the name, truckcrashlaw.com. They are there for you. Outstanding people, very personable. And, you know, I know the guys over there. They're real good human beings. And it's interesting because when I was talking to them about this, one of the first things they said to me was, hopefully no one ever has to use it because it's an injury and it could be devastating when it's all said and done. And you know that. But these things unfortunately do happen and you want to have the right people around you. They're certainly based right here in Jacksonville. They're the only law firm who does this statewide. So make sure you know truckcrashlaw.com. All right, when we return, we'll wrap things up, talk a little bit about the Florida weekend and what happened there in the football game, the orange and the blue, the Gators wrapping up their spring game a week later. There were a couple other spring games over the weekend as well. Alabama actually had one. I know that Justin Fields had his first performance at Ohio State. He went 4 of 13 for 131 yards. He had a rushing TD for Ohio State, the former Georgia quarterback. But we'll talk about the Gators and, you know, what to look for now as they head towards the offseason. How did it go yesterday and what's next for the Florida Gators? All of that is coming up as we go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, a couple of basketball notes I didn't mention. It didn't take long for Luke Walton to find a job. He's now going to the Kings. I'm sure the pressure is going to be far less, even though it's a one-horse town, much like Jacksonville. They're pretty passionate about their basketball in Sacramento. I used to be on at night in Sacramento when I was doing my night show out of Chicago, and really, and I was back when they were very competitive in the West, and it is a great basketball town, but being in L.A., that was just a disaster for Luke Walton, and I don't think it was all his fault. I mean, that just totally backfired, the LeBron decision and now the Magic Johnson situation. So Luke Walton is going to have a much better run at it, you would believe, now in Sacramento. Who knows what's going to happen with the Los Angeles Lakers? I mean, it could be a situation where they add a couple of these, you know, Kyrie Irving or Antonio Davis or whatever, or, you know, if they don't get anyone. Do you want to share that with LeBron? Kyrie Irving didn't want to with LeBron in Cleveland. We all remember that story. Although Irving has said that he's learned from that mistake. Apparently he's, you know, writing himself out of Boston. A lot of people think he's going to end up in New York. Where obviously Kevin Durant, it's already been reported, that is where he is going to go as a free agent at the end of the year. It'd be very interesting to see what New York does and what L.A. does free agency-wise. The NBA playoffs, obviously, getting underway. It is a final as well. It is official, I should say, that Zion Williamson has declared for the draft. No surprise. We all knew this was going to happen. But now those three freshmen at Duke are all leaving after 1 year. And who's to blame? I mean, how could you blame anyone when you have that amount of money staring at you in the face? It's tough not to take advantage of that and move into the league and get paid. I hate it for the sport of college basketball. I would have loved to have seen those kids grow and mature. And, you know, and I think of Coach K, I think of Duke. I still think of it back when kids came back, you know, when Grant Hill came back, when Christian Laettner came back. You know, Bobby Hurley never really did much as an NBA player. But those were fun teams to watch, Thomas Hill, what have you, when they would play 3-4 years. I liked the game better then than I do now. I hate these kids leaving after just 1 year, but I don't blame them. It's not a jealousy thing. The game is not as good, in my opinion, game. But again, I understand why they are leaving. Florida, it's spring game over the weekend. Dan Mullen let us know that, you know, it was going to be a situation where there'd be plenty of gadgets and trick plays, and he did that right out of the gate with Kadarius Toney, who we talked an awful lot about last week. Find ways to get him the football. He is explosive. He is a former quarterback. He threw the ball to Felipe Franks on the very first play, a 40-yard play from Toney to Felipe Franks, who I thought played well. The drive actually ended when Toney caught a touchdown reception from Felipe Franks. So it started with Franks, receiving a ball from Toney, and then the drive ended with a touchdown where Toney caught the ball from Franks. And I've always liked Felipe Franks. I do understand that a lot of you Gator fans do not. It's not his fault that he was pressed into that service ahead of his time. He brought some of this on himself, the negativity. Obviously, it got to him. We saw what he did to the crowd a year ago. But, you know, I want to believe that he has turned the corner to become a better quarterback. And I think the comeback victory against South Carolina really started that. He just tore up Florida State and, you know, led them to a big bowl victory over Michigan. That's pretty impressive to get that done very late in the season, Felipe Franks and the University of Florida. So, you know, their best player, though, in my opinion, is Kadarius Toney. And I know people are going to say, no, it's Jefferson, no, it's Cleveland, and that's okay. I just think he's a different type of guy, and you can do so much with Kadarius Toney. Whether you run him in the slot, whether you run him with reverses, whether you put him in a wildcat, he's just one of those guys that I want touching the ball. Matt Hayes is going to join us tomorrow night to talk much more about Florida. He's covering Missouri now. He's doing a lot of stuff with the SEC West, so we're going to do some of that with Matt. But I did go back and forth with Hayes a little bit earlier today, and he had a chance to watch this game as I did over the weekend, so we'll get the chance to talk with him about the University of Florida. John Huggins had a nice game. Okay, he's drawing the new responsibility now that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is moving on to the NFL. He's going to play the star position, had a pick six from Kyle Trask, and he certainly did some interesting things, and they like him a lot. I don't really understand bringing the former players back in. And I criticized that last week. I thought it was pretty stupid last year when he had Lawrence Wright and Travis McGriff, and he did the same thing now with Chris Doering and, you know, Lito Shepard. Lito lives right here in Jacksonville, outstanding man. I just don't understand that. I guess maybe it plays into the big recruiting weekend, and, you know, I want to show everyone that this is a fun place. But you just have such little time. You know, you only get, a few weeks to practice and a couple of scrimmages. It's one thing to do gadgets and the run plays that you're probably not going to run in the regular season, like the Felipe Franks, Kadarius Toney situation I just mentioned. Then again, they did do a couple of those trick plays last year, did Ford under Dan Mullen. It's another thing to bring back the older players and have them get involved. I just think it's kind of a waste of time. But that's my opinion. I think the flag football game they did at Florida State during halftime was a waste of time as well.
I'm not a miserable human being, but I don't like having my time wasted. And that's kind of the way I look at those events. I mean, be a little bit more productive. You understand what I'm saying? That's just me. I'm sure Dan Mullen probably could care less about my opinion on it. But does that excite you? I mean, I know a lot of Florida fans went. You want to see Chris Doering out there? I mean, he hasn't played since 96, right? You want to see him out there? I know he's an SEC guy. I know he does some work now on the SEC network, and I've had Chris on many times as a guest. I like Chris. Do you want to see him out there? Do you want to see Lito Shepard? I don't want to see him out there. I could care less about it. It's like I don't want to see those guys last week in Tallahassee. Halftime, all bald and fat now. I want to see him out there playing flag football. No, I didn't. No, I was wasting my time. Anyway, there you have it. We'll see. We'll talk about Hayes about this tomorrow night. Big concern I have right now for Florida is getting some push off the edge. And you're losing two very good football players, and Polite and Jefferson. And where is that going to come from? So we'll discuss that. Also, that offensive line. I mean, you're losing a lot of guys. You only returned two starters there. You know, you brought in four highly decorated true freshmen who have early enrolled at the University of Florida. And for the most part, they got some high marks during the spring. And that position has changed. You've seen true freshmen go over there and play right out of the gate on the offensive line in the SEC, including at the University of Florida. That is the one position where this game has really changed that I thought we would never see. It's one thing to be a Kadarius Toney. It's one thing to be a Lito Shepard, okay? You can be freshman and come in and be a receiver, be a back, be a defensive back. I just never thought that we would see offensive linemen come in and play immediately, because it is a position that is based so much on overall strength. And 18-year-old kids, I just don't think, are as strong as 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. They've had more advantage of more time being able to train, more maturity. The body has grown more. But that has been a surprise to me. I remember talking to Coach Bowden about this decades ago. You didn't want to take an 18-year-old true freshman offensive lineman and push him into service. You automatically redshirted those kids. That was an automatic on the offensive line. It didn't matter who you were going to get redshirted. Now, they redshirted Walter Jones as a redshirt sophomore. Guy came in and played 13 games and was a top five pick in the NFL draft. You think that was a mistake? But that's the way the game was then. The game has changed. Where these offensive linemen now, because of nutrition, because of spending time for years working out, they're big, they're strong, they're able to come right in at that position and play as true freshmen. I always thought quarterbacks and offensive linemen were the two positions where you can't expect a true freshman to play in college football. And those are the only two. And we've seen that particular theory totally has been erased. Recent history within this great game. So tomorrow night, again, we'll do a lot of that with Matt Hayes, who is in Missouri, covering the SEC. And we'll talk to him about, you know, what is going on there with Mizzou. And, I still have a little bit of trouble. I think I said the SEC West. Obviously, A&M's in the West. Missouri's in the East. But I still have trouble identifying with Missouri as an SEC team. You know, there's certain things that I just can't accept, like Maryland being in the Big Ten. That doesn't work for me. Texas A&M and Missouri in the SEC, it just doesn't work for me. And I'm trying to adapt with the change, but I don't like it, if that makes any sense. And those are a couple of examples. But Matt Hayes did leave for Missouri. Again, we'll talk to him tomorrow night about what's going on in the SEC, and we'll certainly go back to what Florida did over the weekend as well. Much more on the Orange and Blue game.
Now, the 2-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Waiting in line is so 2018. App your way to the front of the line. Order Moe's online or in the app. Walk in, grab the food, and go.
All right, Denny Thompson is here. He was in Athens. How'd it go?
I was. Hey, I had a question about this whole Missouri thing.
Uh-huh.
What the hell is he in Missouri for?
Don't know.
I mean, I know that's not what we're supposed to say. I know we're supposed to plug it, but Missouri don't even care about Missouri. There'll be like 18 people at that spring game.
I guess it's life after Drew Lock. I don't know.
I just assumed they were shutting the program down after he
left. Yeah, Missouri's a weird, weird, weird deal. I don't know. I almost took a job in KC before I came back here.
Yeah.
I didn't do it for two reasons. Number one, I would have been up in the morning, and I'm not a morning guy. And number
most people would leap at the morning gig.
Yeah, no, I didn't want the morning show. And number two is I really consider going to this radio state because Kansas City was a great market. You know, they love their football, they love their baseball, but all they kept talking to me about was that they were the home of the Kansas Jayhawks in Kansas City, and that they wanted me to be the sideline reporter for the Jayhawks radio network. And I was just sitting here saying to myself, can you imagine a Saturday afternoon when Florida State's got Clemson and Florida's got Georgia, you got all these great games, and I'm broadcasting on the sideline for a Kansas-Missouri or a Kansas-Iowa State college football game? That was one of the reasons right there. I said, I'm coming back to Jacksonville.
I'm with you on that one. That's bad. And I'm saying this stuff about Missouri knowing that, as James and I talked about last week, Missouri is to Florida what NC State is to Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
Just a pain in the butt.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know what the deal is, but I can't think. I think there's more SEC fanfare around Vandy than there is Missouri.
Yeah, I agree with you. They're. I don't know what they are because they're not dominant in basketball. They had some good runs.
Used to be. Yeah,
but anyway.
Well, growing up in Arkansas, that Arkansas-Missouri rivalry was real back in the day in basketball. But But it was Athens was great. I'm gonna talk a lot about it tonight. Of course, we'll talk some Tiger Woods, but I'm gonna spend a lot of time on Athens.
They got some talent up there now,
man. Gosh, it's a luxury.
They got some talent.
It's different ball game they're playing.
They got to win it. There's a lot of pressure on that organization to win a national title. They haven't done it since 1980.
Yeah.
It's a long, long, and it just you look at the surrounding area.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone around them's won it, including Georgia Tech in 91.
Now with Clemson, and it was such a different feel. So I've made, you know, several stops this spring and had a great time doing it. That was just such a different professional feel at Georgia. And I am not a Georgia fan. And I will tell you, and I'm going to tell some stories on our show, they were trying to recruit my kid, like, to become a Georgia fan harder than they were recruiting anything. Like, it was a joke. Like, I walked up and literally Todd Hartley greeted my kid with red and black. Hey, let's go,
Dogs.
Let's go. And next thing I know, Kirby Smart's got him in his office. He's talking to my 8-year-old, not Carson, not me. No. So it was just a fun trip, but certainly they got it going. As much of a Gator fan as I am, I got to tip my hat to him.
Hey, someone finally won in red and black, won a championship.
I saw that.
And that was Tiger Woods.
That was amazing. All
the
right.
Red shirt and black pants.
Be real with me. Tears?
No, lump. A lump in the throat.
Wow.
If my girlfriend asked me a question at that particular time, which she's known to, she talks in some of the most impromptu times. Like yesterday, I'm like, can we just listen to Jim Nantz, please? I'm serious. I mean, it's like, she's the greatest, but I'm just like, can we just listen to Jim Nantz, please? I mean, but if she had asked me a question, I had the lump in the throat where I probably would have had trouble answering the question.
Was the lump when he hugged his kid or before then? Because
it was right after he made the putt and he extended both hands.
I'm the same.
It was right there. That moment.
I can't even blame the kid.
No. The kid didn't do it to me. It was Tiger himself. His yelling to the gallery, the patrons.
Yes.
Was about as remarkable as anything I've seen in sports.
It was definitely one of those things that you just, I'm glad I was late for my son's game.
Yeah. It's great to be when you see something like that, that's why we love sports.
Exactly.
That was an unbelievable situation. Exactly. All right, Denny's coming up right now, Denny and James. right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Thank you to Kerry Smits for joining us a little bit earlier. He covered the Masters for the Florida Times Union. Always good to pick up things with him. Tomorrow night, we push it back an extra hour. We'll be on at 8, and we'll keep you updated on everything that is going on, including OTAs. Going out there tomorrow to hear from Doug Marrone, to hear from Calais Campbell, and to hear from Nick Foles. So I'll have a full report on the Jaguars tomorrow. Again, there is media availability, so I'll have that as part of Tuesday night's program. Thank you to Matt LaVey. He produced the program. My name is Rick Ballew. Much more coming up tomorrow. Remember, tonight's show brought to you by Key Buick GMC. Right now is a great time for you to pick up the brand new number one selling crossover. That's the Buick Encore. Great deal on that right now over there at Key Buick GMC. GMC truck that I drive around it. This is a sensational deal as well. Lifetime warranty if you buy a vehicle at Key, whether it's a Buick or a GMC, a lifetime warranty. So make sure you visit them right across from Tinseltown on the corner of Southside in Gate, or go to KeyBuickGMC.com, see dealer for details. More of Rick Ballew into the night tomorrow from 8 to 10 on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.